What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Well, I have a really special guest today, someone who has experience in leading sales for over 20 years. And that experience came from some pretty big companies like IBM and Microsoft. But over all these years, what she has learned is how you can really scale sales. What is it going to take? What are the strategies? And what are the tactics? And I know that every CEO out there listening wants to increase their sales. Some of you want to go from incremental to exponential. And I know that my guest today is going to help you with some ideas that you can implement right away. So welcome, Radhika. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hello, Alice. It's a pleasure and a complete delight.
Well, let's start. Yeah, let's start by having you tell the audience, how did you gain all of this experience? What was your path like to learn all the things that you now know that have made you so good at growing sales?
Thank you. Interesting question. Nobody really asked me that, but let me give you a little bit about my background. Obviously, immigrated from India 21 years ago, started as an individual contributor in professional services. So I stayed in services for a very long time before getting into software sales, cloud solution sales, and hardware selling. And that was a break that I got with IBM. Over the years, I've also done my MBA from University of Michigan Ross School of Business. And I've done a lot of pageantry, as you can see from this wall behind. It gives me a platform to talk about the causes that I care about. And I am on the boards of four nonprofits. And the reason I do so much is that every step of the way, Alice, I'm learning something. I'm a learner at heart. I have a learn-it-all mindset. And I think that has helped me a lot in gain all the knowledge that I have. Obviously, investing in my own tech intensity, proud to say I have 14 technical certifications. So I think for me, the mindset is it's always day one. So you're always learning. I've been blessed to have some of the finest mentors in the industry. So I've learned and gained experience from them. I think my thinking, my out-of-the-box thinking, creative thinking is influenced by some of the very brilliant mentors that I had over the years. And they challenged my thinking. They taught me that, hey, why is this like this? And why are you not thinking about alternatives, right? So I think that has conditioned me to think the way I do. And I encourage my team to do the same. I encourage my team to think creatively, think about customer business outcomes first and then map our technical capabilities to help them innovate faster.
Yeah, so you said a couple of things that I think are so important for any CEO, anybody who supports a CEO, or really anybody in business, right? If you want to gain that exceptional experience that's going to help you be the best at what you do, you're going to always be learning. There's always something new to learn. And you mentioned, you said you called yourself an always learner. I love that. And you find a mentor, someone who can mentor you. Maybe you'll have many different mentors over the time because you need a different mentor at a different time to help you with those things, which I think is really important as well. And then you said something that I think very few people ever think of, but it's something I always help people use for professional development, and that's being on boards. So you have the things that you're passionate about, and you have, this platform you can use now because you've been in some pageants and things like that, which is wonderful to have that. But being on those boards helps you learn things that you wouldn't learn in your job, because on a board, you're on a committee and you have to do all kinds of different things that you've never done before. And you have to work with all different types of people and learn how to get along because they don't report to you and it's all volunteer. And that really, I think, prepares you well for the workplace. And when people tell me they want to move up in their organization, they want to be promoted, I say, go join a nonprofit board and work for a year. and you will learn so many things that will make you better at your job. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think it is truly a key piece of that always learning.
Yes. And my causes are so diverse, Alice, it will blow your mind. I work for MIX, which is responsible for crisis relief support cases. I am a volunteer. I'm actually on the board of My Family Services, which helps victims suffering from domestic abuse. I'm also supporting Pioneer Medical Research that is helping premature babies. And then I have a cause that I am very passionate about. I'm on their advisory board, Interfaith Leadership Council of Metropolitan Detroit. Ah. So if you look at the causes and how diverse they are, that really helps you enrich your perspective. And there's a lot you can bring to the table professionally as well when you are contributing and giving back to the society.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you learn something on each board that you're on that you can bring to the next board as well, and then bring into your own company. So I really advise everyone out there listening to think about joining a nonprofit board. I know we're all busy. We have kids, we have lives, we have parents, we have so much to do. But give a couple hours a week to a nonprofit by being on a board. And if you can't get on a board right away, which you may not be able to, get on a committee and work your way up to the board. And that is just, I think, one of the best ways to really level yourself up. All right, let's jump into the sales piece of this. So you've been doing sales a long time. You started as an individual contributor. You became a sales leader of, you know, of salespeople, so a manager, and then you became a leader of leaders. So let's talk about some of the things that you've learned along the way that would really help a CEO who's trying to scale their sales right now and trying to decide which way to go with growing their organization. Should we go channel? Should we go direct? Should we have SDRs? Should we not have SDRs? Should we have, you know, what other positions do we need? So where would you like to start?
Let's start with growing sales first. And I would like to just touch on a few things first. When growing sales requires a lot of strategic thinking, customer focus, strong execution capabilities. And at the end of it, you're only as good as your team. So you need the ability to build and motivate a high-performing sales team, hiring and retaining that top talent. You know, getting skilled people that are aligned with your company's values and vision. That's very important, especially in this competitive market. It can be a challenge. And then developing and executing sales strategies. It is not easy, aligning your strategies effectively. And you have to have extreme clarity. At Microsoft, we had this, three-pronged approach: create clarity, generate and energy, and deliver results. And I think that's very important if you put your customer front and center, address your customer's needs, stay ahead of the industry trends, understand the market deeply, understand the competition, identify and pursue new business opportunities, because that also becomes a big challenge. You have to grow the existing customer relationships, their existing spend, and also build new relationships with lines of business. You have to speak the customer's language. I think all that is essential when you think strategically about growing sales.
Yeah. So you mentioned quite a few things. One, starting with strategy though, right? Hard to do good execution if you don't know what your strategy is. So we always have to start there and get that strategy right and make sure it's aligned, right? So everyone who's a part of deploying that strategy knows what it is, understands it, and they know what their part is. So marketing, customer success, sales, ops, everyone that's involved, right, has to understand that strategy and what we're trying to accomplish for our customers. And then you mentioned customer focus. And of course, everybody talks about customer focus these days, but when wasn't it a thing, right? You should always focus on your customer. This is not new, right? So focusing on your customer, I think, has just become a thing we toss around instead of really understanding exactly what does that mean to focus on your customer. And I always say that it's like when you look at your entire customer journey from hello to I am your loyal customer and I will continue to buy from you and I will buy more and different things from you, and I will be a referenceable customer for you because I'm so successful, I'll be happy to tell others. And so when we think about customer focus, we really need to be clear with our team. That doesn't just mean be nice to your customers or, you know, ask them questions, whatever you might think it is. It really means looking at their entire journey and making sure that all along that way, we are giving them an exceptional experience and that they agree that it's an exceptional experience and that they are successful with whatever you've sold them because of that. So let's talk about that a little bit with the customer focus. What are some of the things that you have your team do specifically to make sure they are focused on the customer?
Five-pronged approach. When you are driving clarity, you have to have clear goals, clear KPIs. You cannot hold your team accountable if you are not setting the right expectations. Then develop a plan, coach them, empower them to have a solid plan. We focus a lot at Microsoft on account planning, big bet planning, right? To understand where the gaps are, what opportunities are we targeting? How can we envision new opportunities with these customers? Then delegate. Delegation is key. You can't do everything all by yourself. How do you tap and leverage your team, the extended team that you have? Like you said, all these companies have so many, a plethora of resources that are supporting the customer. So how do you come together as one united team and delegate your tasks and do them effectively? All along as a leader, I need to manage progress. I need to make sure that things are on track, people are doing what they're supposed to do, and going above and beyond to not just satisfy the customer. My term is delight the customer. I think that is key. Customer satisfaction no longer is enough in today's day and age. And at the end of the day, maintaining focus and momentum, because it's very easy to get wrapped up by other things that are thrown your way. And how do you maintain that focus so that your customer remains your top priority?
I love it. Very good. Well, all right. So if we're going to be customer focused, we definitely have to do those things. And I like that you said delight the customer. It's got to be beyond satisfied, because look, pretty much any company can satisfy a customer. Satisfied customers, then, you know, they can easily be lured away, right? So we don't want that. And we want to make sure that they are absolutely in, you know, just engaged with us because we continue to make them successful. That's truly what it's all about. Okay, so from customer focus to execution, let's dive into execution a little bit more. What are some of the key things that you found that make it easy to execute the strategy that you lay out for your team?
I think it's consistency. That's number one. If I had to describe my experience selling and leading sales teams, it's been an energizing roller coaster ride, right? You can't live on past glories. Every day is day one. Three words to describe it would be innovative, dynamic, and collaborative. I think if you focus on those three things, you can have flawless execution. You have to make sure every step of the way you're being consistent in your messaging, in your delivery, adoption, and deployment. For example, we are in cloud sales, right? If your adoption and deployment is flawed, your customer will never be a repeat buyer. He or she's never going to come back to you and ask for more. So I think at the end of the day, you have to think big, you have to be creative, but you have to be consistent and very much focused on business outcome selling. More so, I'm seeing more and more with sales teams these days, they're very focused on their quotas. That, hey, this is a product I need to sell. And if I sell this, I make my numbers and that's it. That's all that I care about.
Right.
I think if you focus on the customer, like I just mentioned, the execution should be all around what their needs are, what their challenges are, what are their pain points, what is the customer doing in their current environment, what their future roadmap looks like, what is the competition doing, how can you advise the customer? You know, that's why we have this term called trusted advisor. Be the trusted advisor, not just to the CIO, but to all rooms of the house. Are you calling on the supply chain officer? Are you talking to the CHRO? Are you going to the chief marketing officer? Are you bringing all rooms of the house together? And do you have that consistent messaging
yeah.
around your solution set. And for that, you have to invest in your tech intensity. First, you got to understand what you're selling. And you got to understand it at level 200. Level 100 is not enough anymore. So I think those things
that
have really
helped. That is so true. Me. Oh my gosh. That is so true, Mridhika, because level 100 is not enough anymore. Salespeople need to be experts in what they're selling. They need to be experts in the industry, experts in their customer, and experts in their own business, right? They to be a trusted advisor, you have to have business acumen so that you know how to have these conversations. And I fear that we are not training our salespeople properly, you know, from when we bring them in the beginning, but then we're not retraining them. Those who have been selling for 20 years, things have changed. Hello, people. Have you noticed? It's not as easy to get somebody on the phone anymore or to hit your quota because there's so many factors in the marketplace with the humans that you talk to. And I think that, what we're not doing is helping them have all the skills they need to be that trusted advisor. And I'll tell you the number one problem that I see, although there's so many problems, you know, when a seller isn't hitting their quota or an entire team isn't hitting quota, but you said it, consistency.
Most likely you lose your customers to competition. And that's what happens when you're not consistent with your cadence, with your messaging, and investing in yourself to gain that tech intensity.
All right. So execution has to be done consistently and everybody's going to be on the same page. And I love that. Now, one of the issues we have in sales today, because things have changed so much, is that salespeople who were successful 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, are not finding that same success anymore. So as I mentioned, the training becomes an issue. But I think when we're out there looking to hire new people, we have to hire differently than we have in the past. And this is a struggle for every CEO that I know that's has this business-to-business complex sale. They're selling to companies that are 100 to 1,000 times their size. They're maybe somewhere between 5 and 30 years old, and they have very small sales teams, but they want to scale, and they're trying to grow their sales team. I know you are an expert in hiring by now with all the hiring you've done throughout your career. So let's talk a little bit about how do you get the right salespeople and sales leaders on your team?
That's a great question. And that's very close to my heart because when I think of hiring philosophy, I think of 5 key components there as well. One is focus on cultural fit. And that's really important for me because we need to make sure we find candidates who share the company's core values, can thrive in a fast-paced environment, but they're aligned to the company's values, leadership principles, understand the company's vision, hire the best. And when I say that, you know, I mean, identify candidates who have a proven track record of success, a passion for innovation, a dedication to customer service, focus on those skills, capabilities, and experiences that the role requires. Emphasize technical skills. And I am a big advocate of tech intensity. I place a strong emphasis on how technically skilled the candidate is. Technical excellence is required, is essential almost for, you know, developing the right talent, getting the right talent in and then developing and nurturing them. So it's very important to focus on tech intensity. Then encouraging D&I, that's very important as well because diverse teams are critical for driving innovation. We see that when we are hiring a diverse range of candidates from different backgrounds, ethnicities, experiences, it enriches the workplace. It helps with better decision-making as well. Out-of-box creative thinking that I've been talking about. And at the end of the day, use data-driven approaches. You know, you should evaluate your candidates through various tools that are available to us, behavioral interviewing, technical assessments, personality tests. I think a number of tech giants like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they do a great job. Their hiring processes are extremely thorough. And a candidate has to go through 5 or 6 stages to actually land the job. But that's why we always say these companies have some of the most brilliant minds that are working there. I think if you keep those 4 or 5 things in mind, you can hire and retain the best talent.
So I think culture fit is really important. And I have a client recently that hired someone who is not a good culture fit. And just even during the onboarding process, it became very apparent, right? So what are some of the questions that you ask or the things that you observe that help you know whether someone's going to be a good culture fit?
Very good question. You know, a company's culture refers to the set of values and ethics and beliefs that define our day-to-day operations. A CEO that you talked about and his leadership team sets the tone for that culture. I think some of the common questions I have been asking people to understand if they're a culture fit are, how do you navigate conflict? How do you deal with teams that have competing visions? How do you deal with complex projects? What is your leadership style? Because often when you're asking those kind of questions, you can understand a couple of qualities that the candidate brings to the table. Have they been collaborative? Have they given autonomy to their peers when needed? Have they been respectful? Have they shown integrity? I think those are the key elements. Have they shown places where they've been innovative? And have they built trust with their teams? Have they exhibited a growth mindset? You're able to gauge all those values through some of those questions. And I think we just have a set of those that I at least bring to the table when I go for my hiring exercises.
Yeah, especially in a complex sale, I like to ask them how they have navigated internal conflict over the way a big deal should be done, right? Yes. One of these big bet deals, right? That you talk about, key accounts, large accounts, whatever you want to call them. But when you have your own internal team and maybe, you know, your subject matter experts are saying one thing, the salespeople want it to go down another way. Maybe there's a senior executive involved saying, no, we can't do any of that, you know? And I like to ask them how they, to explain a time when they had something like that happen and how did they navigate it and who won, or did they feel like somebody won, or it was a collaborative effort and they came up with an answer to came to consensus. I think that speaks volumes, right? When they can get through where their own internal team was trying to sell something and, you know, wasn't agreeing on it. So yeah.
How do you build trust when there is a conflict? How do you build trust? Yeah. How do you navigate complexity? How do you navigate ambiguity? I think if you focus around those questions, you get a feel of whether this person has exhibited the right qualities in his leadership journey, in his or her leadership journey to land the role. So I think those are some of the questions that I have focused on. Yeah, you're spot on.
So recently, I've seen a lot of hiring mishaps, shall we call them, where we've hired someone, we were so excited about them, they interviewed so well, and we just were so excited to get them going, we got them onboarded, and then they really didn't do the job, you know, that they were meant to do. You know, can you give us an example of something like that and how you might have handled that?
Yeah, so years ago, there was someone on my team that we hired, and we felt he could do the job, came from a partner organization, so had really not worked at a tech giant, so did not know how to navigate through the organization. But that's where, as leaders, we come in, we provide coaching. But what I was noticing is that because his territory was doing really well, and he had inherited a very good territory, I could see a sense of complacency. I could see that, oh, relationship building was suffering, not really knocking on every room of the house, not building lines of business relationships. I was also noticing, and the team was noticing, I regularly take feedback from my extended team. So the team came to me and said, we do not see this person having a point of view when he's talking to C-suite stakeholders, over dependence on the solution specialist and the customer success unit, but not coming in with a point of view. So I decided to get to the bottom of it. You know, I think in such situations, what helps is transparent, open communications, you know, aligning clear expectations. I got on a call one-on-one and I tried to get to the bottom of it, helped him understand that this is the feedback from the extended team. So where is it that he needs help and support from us to bring him up to speed? And some of the things that we discovered during the process is he doesn't know what he doesn't know. He came from a partner organization, did not understand the industry trends, did not understand how our solutions map to customer business outcomes. So there was a lot of homework that had to be done. Market trends, he was clueless. So that's why he didn't have a point of view. That's why he was not willing to go and talk to supply chain managers or a CHRO, because he just didn't have a point of view around our industry. So I think my coaching there helped him, and we came up with a plan. We said, okay, let's get on a weekly sync. I told him I'll share some resources and tools with him on certifications, some trainings, that internal trainings that our company provides, and even do some pitch perfect sessions, right? Like, go ahead, understand what we sell, and why don't you pitch it to your peers in a no judgment zone so that you get comfortable with articulating your point of view. But first things first, go research the customer, go research the industry, go research the market, read their 10K, read their quarterly earnings, do your homework, build a solid account plan. And once you've done all that, you would be able to come in with a solid point of view. Again, it comes back to my previous point of invest in your tech intensity so that you can have a meaningful conversation. Why? Otherwise, why would a C-suite executive give you their time? You need to earn that time, right? And I think that helped over a period of time. He did get a few certifications. He did understand our solution set very well. You got to keep that growth mindset. You have to be open to feedback. Feedback is a gift. You cannot, get offended by it. If you get offended by it, you'll never grow. You have to identify your areas of growth. We all have areas of growth. You got to identify your areas of growth and work consistently to fix those. And self-awareness is very important in all of this. If you're not self-aware, if you're fighting it, that, no, I think I've got it. My numbers are doing great. So your numbers are doing great this quarter, but sales, you cannot live on past glory. And your numbers may look good this quarter, but as you're approaching the next fiscal, you've not sown the seeds for the next opportunity. Hence, it's all going to crumble. So what are you doing to get revenue 6 months from now? And I think he took my coaching well, and we kept that kept those one-on-one sessions going for 6 to 8 months, and it really helped him.
Yeah, we got to go ask them so that they can tell us. And we have to sometimes dig in, because sometimes they don't know what they don't know. So you had to dig a little deeper to get to the bottom of it and be able to figure out a plan for him. And I think people do give up on new hires too quickly sometimes, because they don't identify the right problems, so they can't solve for it and make a plan. But I also think sometimes they hang on to them too long, right? Sometimes you get somebody who can't do the job, and it doesn't matter what you do, they're not going to be able to do the job. It was just a mishire. Let them be successful somewhere else.
Find the right role for them then. In that case, then find the right role that matches their skills and capabilities. Yeah. Help them as much as you can, support them as a leader. But if it's not the right fit, I think in the long run, that person will not be happy. At the end of the day, your work should make you happy. And I think as leaders, it's our responsibility that if we see it's a misfit, then maybe align him or her to a different role.
Yeah, I love that. All right. You mentioned a few other things, but the one that I want to touch on is something very near and dear to my heart, and I know it is to yours as well. In hiring and getting a really great team built that can grow together, we need diversity. Now, this is a hot topic, right? And there's a lot out there on the internet about diversity. But the thing that I notice, Radhika, is that people say they want to hire a diverse sales team, but then I see everyone on their sales team looks the same. Might be all white men, might be all women, but either way, that is not diverse. We need a good mixture of gender balance. We need a good mixture of people who think differently and come from different backgrounds. And then we also need a good mix of humans with different, backgrounds, life, where they came from, how they were raised, just, you know, what parts of the world they came from. We just need a mix of diversity in every way we possibly can. We don't want people who look just like us, think just like us, and act just like us, because we will not grow. So talk about diversity, especially because you've come from some pretty big companies who have worked on that initiative. How do we do it? How do we hire diversity?
I think you've got to be very intentional about it. You're right. Most people just talk about it and very few walk the talk, because it's very easy to hire like-minded individuals, somebody who thinks like us, somebody who's been there, done that, and, you know, oh, we get along. Let's just get him on board. Yeah. It's easy to bring this person up to speed. But the culture of recruitment has to be where we are very intentional about the kind of people, the kind of talent we bring into the team. And it has to be from diverse backgrounds, diverse experiences, gender, ethnicity, because at the end of the day, it enriches the workplace. And there's so much you can learn from different people who come from different cultures. So you've got to be very intentional about it. And I think that's something that CEOs can learn, that this is something that has to come from leadership. Your executive leadership team sets the tone for that. And certain companies I know are very strict about it, that, hey, this part of your team is going to be internals. This is going to be external. This is going to be women. This is going to be Hispanics. They're very, very particular about how many people we're going to hire and from, you know, which is ethnicity. And I think that's good, because then you would not just go about hiring your own fans. I've seen leaders do that. I've seen leaders, they bring in friends. And it makes their life easy. But that's not true. I've always believed that if you just hire people who are your fans, you will never get better at what you do. Rather, hire people who come from diverse backgrounds and make sure they're believers. They believe in your capabilities to the extent that they follow your vision, but then they can also call you out when you're not doing the right thing. And I think that's the difference between believers and fans. So you have to be very intentional about it, Alice.
So rounding up the hour here, let's go to some advice for CEOs who are trying to scale their sales. Let's give them a couple of things they can really walk away with and try to implement.
Couple of points here. Focus on your company's vision, mission, and your core values. I am very impressed with what I'm seeing at Microsoft, Google, and Amazon with the leadership principles that they have, or the core values around which they operate. And CEOs need to communicate it effectively and with clarity to their leadership team so that it cascades down to the field teams. Second of all, share that vision with your team and hire the right talent. I've talked about hiring philosophy and how we can build a strong sense of purpose and direction for our employees. But it's very important to hire the right talent. And then thirdly, stay focused on their well-being. We have a plethora of resources, for example, at Microsoft, where employee well-being was very important. And for us to function effectively, to build a strong, talented, dedicated team, which is critical to any company's success, it's very important that we focus on the employees' well-being. We are giving them breaks. We are not overwhelming them with a lot of meetings and deal closures. I think if they get time to take a break and re-energize, they will be more effective in their jobs. So that kind of a culture, building that culture around employee well-being. Then I think being data-driven, that's very important. In today's volatile business environment, using data to inform your decision-making, to track your progress towards your goal is very important. How do we transform? How business transformations can be very difficult. And now in our today's world, we are moving from economies of scale to economies of speed. Change is the only constant, right? There are ever-evolving tech capabilities, cloud solutions out there. Our competitive differentiation comes with how fast you can adapt to changing market conditions, leveraging data. Business leaders around the world are addressing economic challenges, geopolitical challenges, and there are lingering effects of COVID-19 pandemic. So it's very important to be data-driven and to build operational resiliency. It's very important to tap into all the tools that we have to build a strong data foundation. Hybrid work is very important, right? And there has to be a strong focus on striking the right balance between in-person and remote work models. So I think for all of that to be effective, you've got to be adaptable. You have to be willing to pivot your strategy if necessary, embrace new technologies. It's not important to do things better. It's important now to do things differently. Transforming your business model is critical. You know, translating the levers that have worked historically, having mechanisms in place, having a flywheel approach, reducing friction in your environment is very important. Staying adaptable all along. I think that's what I'll wrap it up with.
Yeah, staying adaptable, removing friction. Those are two things that CEOs absolutely have to stay focused on. And using data to do all of that. There's so much data out there that's available that is not used well. And I do think that is great advice for CEOs to really take a look at what data they have and use it to remain agile, use it to adapt, right? And also use it to help them, like you said, with the well-being of their own team. The data will give you information. It will inform you of what you can do and how you can do it and how you can pivot quickly. Gosh, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been so enjoyable to talk with you. I really appreciate you sharing all of your advice with us.
Thank you, Alice. It's been an honor chatting with you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.